Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today, we will be talking about Barrick Gold, which is a gold and copper mining company. In this video, we'll go over the company's business, then review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios, and finally find the intrinsic value of the company. So let's dive in and review Barrick Gold.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at Barrick's annual report. This is for the fiscal year that ended in 2021. On page 4 of this report, the company provides us an overview about its business. It states that it is a sector-leading gold and copper producer, operating mines and projects in 18 countries in North and South America, Africa, Papua New Guinea, and Saudi Arabia. The company claims that its portfolio spans the world's most prolific gold and copper districts and is focused on high-margin, long-life assets. On the next page, the company provides us a map of where its global businesses are located. These are its gold and copper-producing mines as well as its projects. Majority of its operations are located in North and South America, some in Africa, and in the Middle East. Now let's go to page 170 of this report, where the company provides us a better description about its business segments. The company's reportable operating segments consist of 9 gold mines, which are Carlin, Cortez, Turquoise Ridge, Pueblo Viejo, Lulo Guamcoto, Kibali, Veladero, North Mara, and Bulyanhulu. Additionally, Barrick points out that the remaining operating segments, including its remaining gold mines, copper mines, and projects, have been grouped into an other category and will not be reported on individually. On the next page, the company provides us a revenue breakdown of its reportable segments. The company's Carlin Nevada gold mine for the fiscal year that ended in December 31st, 2021, brought in a revenue of about $2.7 billion, which, after paying for its costs and expenses, amounted to a segment income of about $1.2 billion. This was a margin of about 44.25%. The Pueblo Viejo side brought in about $1.5 billion in revenue. And after taking into account that segment's site operating costs, royalties, community relationship, depreciation, and other expenses, it had about $759 million as its segment income. This implies that the Pueblo Viejo side had a profit margin of about 50.1%. Similarly, the Lulo Guamcoto side had a profit margin of about 38%. The other mines had a profit margin of about 30.4%. Barrick's total reportable segment revenue amounted to about $12.5 billion, and after taking into account its costs and expenses, it had about $4.9 billion as its total reportable segment income, which implies a profit margin of about 39.5%. What this means is every $100 that Barrick's made in revenue, after it took into account the cost of sales and its exploration and other expenses, it had about $39.5 left as profit. On the next page, the company provides us a geographic information about where its assets are located and the amount of revenue generated from those regions. For 2020 and 2021, the United States had majority of the company's non-current assets. The non-current assets are the company's long-term assets. These are its plant, property, and equipment. Barrick's total non-current assets for fiscal year 2021 amounted to about $38.6 billion, out of which more than 60% of those assets are located in the United States, Mali, and Dominican Republic. Now, if we glance over the company's revenue column for the year 2021, the company's total revenue amounted to about $11.98 billion, out of which the United States brought in about $6.1 billion. So more than half of the company's total revenue came from the United States, followed by Mali and Dominican Republic. Now that we have a brief understanding of the company's business and its operating segments, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, I'm on Morningstar looking at Barrick Gold Corp. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2012, the company's revenue amounted to about $14.5 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $12 billion. Over the past 10 years, we can see the cyclicality in the company's business as the company's revenue dropped down to about $7.2 billion in 2018. And ever since then, the company's revenue has slowly been trending upwards. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2012, the company's operating income amounted to about $6 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $4.4 billion. Over the past 10 years, Barrick's operating income has a similar trend as its revenue. Barrick's operating income got to a low of about $1.3 billion in 2018. And ever since then, its operating income has been trending upwards. Next is the operating margin. The operating margin is the ratio of the company's operating income to its revenue. So it gives us an idea of every $100 that the company makes, how much money is left over once it pays for the cost of goods and operating expenses. For the year 2021, the company's operating margin was about 41.2%. And for the trailing 12 months, it was about 36.6%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in sales, by the time it paid for its cost of goods and operating expenses, it had $36.6 left. Ideally, we want the company's operating margin to be positive, staying steady or increasing. Next, looking at the net income. The net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it pays for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Barrick's net income was negative from 2012 through 2015, which means that the company reported a loss in those years. In 2016, its net income was about $655 million. Then it reported a loss of about $1.5 billion in 2018. And ever since then, the company's net income has been positive, which tells us that the company has been profitable since 2019. For the fiscal year 2021, the company's net income was about $2 billion. After that, looking at the dividends per share, back in 2012, the company paid out about 75 cents per share as dividend. Over the next few years, the company's dividend payouts decreased to about 8 cents per share in 2016. The next couple of years, that is in 2017 and 2018, the company paid out about 12 cents per share as dividend. Ever since 2018, the company has been hiking its dividends every year. For the trailing 12 months, the company paid out about 36 cents per share as dividend. Since March of 2022, Barrick's has instituted a new dividend policy where it would have a quarterly base dividend and then it would have a performance dividend based on the amount of net cash available on the company's balance sheet. Next, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2012, the company had about 1 billion shares outstanding, and for the trailing 12 months, that number had grown to about 1.779 billion shares. Ideally, we wanted the company's shares outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. However, it is fairly common to see a mining company whose shares outstanding numbers are increasing, as when a company issues more shares, it is one of the ways for the company to finance its projects and its future growth. Barrick's has instituted a new share buyback program where it plans on buying back about $1 billion of shares over the next 12 months. Next, looking at the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2012, the company's book value was about $21.82 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $13.41 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has always been positive, which tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2012, the company's free cash flow was negative. It stayed negative all the way through 2014. This means that the company's capital spending exceeded its operating cash flow. In 2015, the company's free cash flow was about $1 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $1.9 billion. Ideally, we want to see the company's free cash flow to be positive, staying steady or increasing. However, it is fairly common to see a mining company whose free cash flow is volatile. I will be using the 2021 free cash flow of $1,943 million for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Barrick's net margins were negative from 2012 through 2015 because its net income was negative. In 2016, the company's net margin was about 7.65%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 16.87%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in sales over the past 12 months, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had about $16.87 left as pure profit. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. The company's return on equity from 2012 through 2015 was negative because its income was negative. In 2016, the company's return on equity was 8.67%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 8.57%. Whenever the company reported a profit, that is, whenever the company had a positive net income number, it had a return on equity that was greater than 8%. Next, looking at the return on invested capital, this number gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. The company's return on invested capital was negative from 2012 through 2015 because its income was negative. In 2016, the company's return on invested capital was about 6.55%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 7.89%. Barrick Gold's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 5.24%. And since the company's return on invested capital is greater than its weighted average cost of capital, we can safely say that the management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage gives us an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2016, the company's interest coverage was about 4 times, and for the trailing 12 months, it was about 12.76 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health and liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company has enough assets to fulfill its liabilities over the next 12 months. Back in 2012, the company's current ratio was at 1.33, and for the latest quarter, it's at 3.95. Next is the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's quick ratio was at 0.63. In 2013, it was 1.06. And for the latest quarter, it's at 2.98. Barrick's current and quick ratios over the past 10 years indicate that the company always had enough assets to fulfill its liabilities over the next 12 months, and that it was never in a liquidity bind. Next is the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 1.0 tells us that all of the company's assets are financed via shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 2.0 tells us that half of the company's assets are financed via shareholders' equity, and half of them are financed via liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's financial leverage to be staying steady or decreasing. Back in 2012, the company's financial leverage was at 2.16. Over the next few years, the company's financial leverage increased to a high of about 3.67 in 2015. And ever since then, the company's financial leverage has slowly been trending downwards. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2012, the company's debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.55. And similar to the trend that we saw for the company's financial leverage, the company's debt-to-equity ratio increased to a high of about 1.36 in 2015. And ever since then, the company's debt-to-equity ratio has been trending downwards. For the latest quarter, the company's debt-to-equity ratio is at 0.23. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes a sale to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2012, the company's day sales outstanding was at 5.86 days, and for the trailing 12 months, it's at 7.72 days. Ideally, we want the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is the company whose day sales outstanding number is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company is trying to be aggressive with its accounting, as it's trying to recognize its revenue sooner so that it can inflate its income numbers on its income statement. Barrick's day sales outstanding numbers over the past 10 years have hovered between 2 to 8 days range. Next, looking at the day's inventory, this number gives an idea of how many days does Barrick's product sit in its inventory before it's sold. Back in 2012, the company's day's inventory was about 124 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 93 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day's inventory number to be staying steady or decreasing, because we want to see that inventory which is sitting around on the company's balance sheet be pushed onto the company's income statement and be realized as a profit, which is why we want to see the company go through its inventory as quickly as possible. Barrick's day's inventory has been trending downwards ever since 2017. Finally, looking at the payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does the company take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2012, the company's payables period was about 47 days, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about 38 days. Ideally, we want the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose payables period is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company's management is trying to hold on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers. In the case of Barrick Gold, the company's payables period has stayed fairly consistent and has slowly been trending downward since 2018. Now let's look at the company's current valuation. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. Barrick Gold has a PE of 22.3. The company's price-to-book is at 1.9. The company's price-to-sales is at 3.8. The company has a price-to-cash flow of 10.3 and has a dividend yield of 1.5%. When we compare Barrick Gold's current valuation to its 5-year average, we can see that the company is overvalued on all the valuation metrics other than its dividend yield metric. Now let's look at Barrick Gold's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Over here, I pasted the company's 2021 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which was $1,943 million. I'm using an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 6%. What this means is I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 6% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%, What this means is I want this investment to give me an annual return of 10%. In other words, I want to double my investment in about 7 years. I'm using a long-term growth rate of 2.723%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 2.723%. This number is in line with the US 30-year treasury yield. The company has 1,779 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of $5,396 million. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the company's intrinsic value to be about $16 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price, which is about $25.41 per share, we can see that the company's current stock is trading about 1.57 times the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $16 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $34 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $16. If you disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that Barrick Gold is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $6 per share. And if you disregard the debt, in other words, if you think that Barrick Gold is going to grow into perpetuity, so there is no point for us to worry about the company paying off its debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $19 per share. Finally, let's try to figure out what kind of return can we expect to get on this investment if you were to invest in the security at the current stock price. For that, I would set my sell as the intrinsic value, which is $16.18. My two value is going to be the current stock price, which is about $25.41 per share. And I will run this analysis by changing my discount rate. What I get is if I were to invest in the security at the current stock price of about $25.41 per share, I can expect to get an annual return of about 7.78% on this investment. In conclusion, Barrick Gold has good fundamentals. The company is not over-leveraged, so we know that Barrick Gold is going to be around for the years to come. The company's unit costs are likely to tick up due to an increase in mining taxes in Nevada and higher energy costs. However, the unit costs are anticipated to move back down as it improves its efficiencies associated with mining. Next, Barrick Gold has the ability to replace its production via exploration at its high-quality mines, which is viewed as a plus for the company. Barrick Gold recently announced an attractive dividend policy where it plans to pay out a base dividend every quarter. And then on top of that base dividend, it would pay out a performance dividend based on the amount of net cash available on its balance sheet. On top of this dividend policy, Barrick Gold also plans to repurchase about $1 billion worth of its shares outstanding over the next 12 months. Lastly, it's important to understand that mining stocks are highly cyclical, so the profitability and the amount of dividends that an investor is likely to get is going to depend on the characteristics of the underlying economy. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Barrick Gold interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you.